We must get knowledgeable because there are serious problems developing in the world. And if you understand what's happening, you will survive and you might even thrive. If you don't understand, you will probably suffer. In 2008, we had a big problem in the world because of too much debt. The debt was very, very high and everybody suffered. Well, since 2018, the debt has skyrocketed everywhere. I can see down the road. There are reasons that America, like every other international currency, will lose its status, and the process is starting now.
Okay. So, hello and welcome to another episode. And today I have Jim Rogers. And I don't think Jim Rogers really needs too much of an introduction. If you don't know him, you should know him. And look, you know, I'd say he's one of the wisest investors that I know and probably one of my favorite. And so, Jim, I've been following your, you know, work for quite a while. And, you know, welcome to the show.
I am delighted to be here, Tian. It sounds like it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
By the way, for those who don't know, I am in Singapore as we speak. It is in the morning here in Singapore.
Yeah, and it's 12 hours. You know, there's an exact 12 hour difference here. And so, you know, I've heard about your peanut story. I've heard about your single digit phone number story. But right now, you know, I'm quite interested in how you went from law school to working on Wall Street. Because, you know, in today's logic, you wouldn't think that's, you know, too normal, because Wall Street, you know, business school. And so I want to know how you got the opportunity to work on Wall Street and, you know, how you became successful there, because, you know, you entered with kind of a disadvantage, I'd say.
Well, when I was at university, I was, like many young people, I was confused. I was going to go to law school, business school, medical school. I had no idea what I wanted in the future. And then by accident, I had a summer job on Wall Street and I fell in love, because here was a place that would pay me to do what I was really keen on was what was happening in the world. And here was a place that would pay me. Oh my gosh, it would pay me to pursue my passions and my interests. And if I did it right, they would pay me a lot. So I didn't go to law school. I didn't go to medical school. I didn't go to business school. As soon as I could, I went to Wall Street and had a good time. And how did we succeed? Well, hard work, love of what we were doing, looking where other people were not looking, looking at the things that were ignored, and sometimes it worked.
So I guess the times were kind of different from now. Well, they always change. And, you know, today, I think you have a lot of, opinions about the market. And, you know, I hear you talking about bubble in the economy. So, you know, maybe you could talk a little bit more about that.
Well, throughout history, all over the world and all asset classes, there have been some times when things are very depressed for a variety of reasons, and sometimes when things get very exuberant. The exuberant times are referred to as bubbles or manias, and when things get out of control, bubbles develop. It's usually because there's a lot of easy money around, free money around, and things have been rising for a while, such as now. Gigantic amounts of free money, easy money around all over the world. And many assets have been rising for a while, stocks and bonds especially. So when they go up a long time, sometimes in history, and it's happened many times, new people hear about this new game. We can make a lot of money and it's easy. And all you have to do is buy stocks, buy bonds, and you can make a lot of money. So a lot of new people come in, they're not very experienced, they don't have much knowledge, and the traditional signs occur. Some stocks go up every day, margin debt goes higher and higher, many new issues, IPOs, they're called, initial public offerings. Many new issues happen. SPACs, things called SPACs, which are special interest, ways to buy or sell it, buy stocks or sell stocks. All of these things have happened many times before, and they're happening again now. I mean, it's not a full-fledged bubble yet, because in a full-fledged bubble, everything goes up every day. Well, so far, some stocks, some things are going up every day, but I don't see a complete bubble yet. I do in some areas of the world economy, but not completely. Bonds around the world are in a bubble. Bonds have never been this expensive in the entire history of the world. Never in world history have bonds been this expensive. So that's a bubble. Some bubbles are developing in stocks. Some bubble in are developing in property. If you go to Seoul or New Zealand or some places, property is definitely in a bubble. But some things are still not in bubbles. So I'm not giving up yet on investing. The cheapest asset class that I know in the world, commodities are still very cheap. I mean, things like silver. Silver is down 50% from its all-time high. Sugar is down 70-80%, 60-70% from its all-time high. Some things are still cheap. Commodities are still cheap for the most part, but other bubbles are developing.
Yeah, and you know, I've also heard that you have quite a bit of U.S. dollars. U.S. dollars.
Oh, dollars. I do have U.S. dollars because usually or often when hard times come, when turmoil comes to markets, people look for a safe haven. Many people think the U.S. dollar is a safe haven, but for historical reasons, it's been the world currency for 60, 70, 80 years. So many people think it will be a safe haven. And that's why I own it, because when the turmoil does come, the U.S. dollar will go up. It will get overpriced. It could turn into a bubble. I hope I'm smart enough to sell it. The U.S. dollar is not a safe haven, Tien, not anymore. The U.S. is the largest debtor nation in the history of the world, and the government is printing staggering amounts of money every day and borrowing staggering amounts every day. So the U.S. dollar is not a safe haven, but people think it is. So when the turmoil comes, it will go up. I hope I'm smart enough to sell my U.S. dollars when that happens.
So what do you think about some of the other, I guess, asset classes that could be also considered as a safe haven, like, you know, like short-term U.S. bonds? Because, you know, like you're switching, well, I guess you're jumping around from short-term U.S. bonds to short-term U.S. bonds. And you're actually earning like a little bit of, just a tiny bit of interest, or you know, something like TIPS, like the you know, inflation protected bonds.
That's the same as U.S. dollars. That's how you own. I mean, most people, if they own U.S. dollars, wouldn't have U.S. dollars sitting over in the closet. They would have it in short-term interest-bearing paper, with short-term treasury, short-term bonds. That's owning U.S. dollars.
So what about, you know, maybe some of the other like safe haven currencies, like, you know, like the Swiss franc or something?
Well, the Swiss franc certainly for decades was an unbelievably sound currency. It was the soul of virtue. Unfortunately, now the Swiss National Bank is different from what it was when I was a kid. For instance, they own a lot of U.S. stocks. They own Amazon, they own Google. When the world finds out that the Swiss franc is no longer backed by integrity and gold, it's now backed by Amazon and Google, the view of the Swiss franc may change. I own some Swiss francs, not a lot, but I am afraid that when the next bad times come and the people find out what the Swiss National Bank has been doing, it will certainly diminish some of the view of the Swiss bank, Swiss franc. But I do own some at the moment.
And so right now you're mostly positioned in commodities?
Well, I don't know. I don't have a committee I have to answer to, Jim. It's just my money. I certainly own of commodities. I've been buying more commodities this year. I'm sure I will buy more in the future. As I said before, the cheapest asset class I see around the world are commodities, and with governments printing huge amounts of money, historically that has led to price increases, the increased prices for real things, wheat, lumber, whatever it happens to be, copper. These things go up historically when there's been a lot of money printing, and probably will again. So I will be buying more commodities as we go along.
Yeah. So do you have any favorite commodities, or should we just buy the Rogers International Commodity Index?
Well, many studies show that index investing is the best way for nearly all investors. Index investing outperforms nearly all investors, including professional investors. And I'm a little bit lazy, so I buy the Rogers International Indexes. I know they're a very good way to invest in commodities, and I continue to do so.
So are there any specific commodities that you think are better than some other ones, or do you think they're just pretty much equal?
Whatever I tell you would probably turn out to be wrong. If I tell you, silver, I'm going to buy more silver. I know I'm going to buy more silver. Silver is down a lot. I'm not buying it now, or gold. I'm waiting for the correction to continue, and who knows when the correction will end, but certainly silver's down a lot, agriculture's down a lot, but nearly all commodities are down. I mean, copper is booming right now, so copper is not the best, certainly not the cheapest, but some of the others are still down a lot.
So, for something like silver, would you think that, we could get another manipulation that would cause the price to go really high?
Well, historically, when people lose confidence in countries or governments or money, they have turned to gold and silver. I presume they will again in the future. And so, yes, I will be buying more gold. I will be buying more silver as we go forward. I will be buying more agriculture. I'll be buying more. I mean, oil is down 50% from its all-time high. I will certainly be buying more energy as we go forward. All of these things, if history's any guide, the price of real assets will go up, and go up a lot.
Yeah, and I know that you said that if Bitcoin succeeds, it could be outlawed. And I'm not a big Bitcoin fan, but what do you think about gold, or maybe, I don't know if silver would be, but what about something like gold? Do you think that could be outlawed?
Something like what?
Gold.
Well, gold has never been outlawed. It was permanently. It has been out. America in the 30s made it illegal for Americans to own gold because gold was was the basis for the currency system, the monetary system in those days. Gold is no longer the basis for anybody's money system or currency system. So I doubt if they would outlaw gold again, but they might. Some countries, when they're falling apart and everybody's buying gold, some governments try to outlaw gold. Governments don't like to lose control, and controlling the money is important to governments if they're going to maintain control. So sure, they can do anything. It's less likely that they would outlaw gold again, because as I said, gold then was the complete basis for money. And so if they wanted to maintain control, they had to outlaw gold. They thought, not me. So my view about cryptocurrencies is that if they become successful as money, and the crypto people say it is money and will be money, my only answer to that is, listen, as long as you can trade it, and many people are trading and making money, so what? But if and when it becomes successful as money, which they say, I doubt that many governments will say, okay, you can use their money if you want to, or you can use our money, because all money is going to be on the computer. All money in China, China's already, you cannot take a taxi in China with money. you have to have your, you know, your phone money to have to take a taxi in China or buy ice cream or anything else. Money is going to be on the computer, but I would suspect it's going to be government money, not other money. I would like for it to be a competitive system and that other money, people could use other money. We will see.
And so, you know, when you're investing in commodities, do you like any like commodity producing companies, you know, whether it's like mining companies or it's, I don't know, something that produces like agriculture? Do you like the companies?
Well, if you can find the right companies, you will clearly make a lot more money. If you can find a company that's going to find a silver deposit in Berlin, you should buy all you can, because that stock will go up many times. Silver will go up, in my view, but if you find the right mine, oh my gosh, you're going to make multiples. Or if you could, if you know about futures, if you can buy silver futures and use the huge leverage, you'll make a lot of money. But for most people, buying the index is certainly the simplest way and is the best way for most people. But Tian, if you know the right company, if you know the right agricultural company, of course you'll make more money. But for most people, an index is the best way.
Okay, and talking about agriculture. So you know you're quite bullish on agricultures, and I wanted to get your opinion on, you know, maybe something like fertilizer commodities, because I saw in 2008 they kind of outperformed agriculture in general, and recently I'd say they're kind of. I wouldn't say they're outperforming, but they're just kind of doing the same as general agriculture. And so do you have any thoughts on like fertilizers and stuff like this?
Well, if agriculture does well, obviously, not obviously, but probably fertilizer is going to do well too, because the farmers will have more money. They will want to grow more crops. Grow crops better, and so they will buy more fertilizer all over the world. That's always happened that way. I happen to be a director of a large Russian fertilizer company, and I own the shares, obviously. So that's not the reason I'm bullish on fertilizer, but yes, I do know that if agriculture does well, farmers buy more fertilizer, tractors, their wives, their husbands buy more clothes, everything gets better for the farmers and what they buy.
Okay, and talking about Russia, I've heard you before talking about, you know, you like right now stuff like Russian companies and Chinese companies and Japanese companies. And I'm not that familiar with Russian companies. It's not a country where everybody invests in, but I have a few questions about Japan and about China as well. And so, you know, for Japan, I saw that a lot of their economy was mostly service and manufacturing jobs. And so there was very little energy and mining in Japan. And so they import a lot of oil and natural gas and coal. And they do have some agriculture there, but wouldn't that be a little bit like anti-cyclical?
What, Japan? Well,
because they're importing a lot of like natural, energy, and they have like shrinking energy inventories there.
Well, Japan has huge problems facing it. Japan has had declining population since 2010. The debt is skyrocketing in Japan every day, higher and higher. So no, Japan has serious, serious problems. I don't know if there'll be a Japan in 60 years at the rate things are going. It's just addition, you know, you add the debt, you subtract the population. That's not a good outlook. Having said that, I own Japanese shares. The Japanese market is still down 30 or 40% from its all-time high. So it's not a bubble. And more important for me, the Bank of Japan prints a lot of money every day and buys stocks, bonds, and ETFs. Well, the Bank of Japan has more money than I do. And if they're going to buy ETFs, I'm going to buy Japanese ETFs. This is not good for Japan. This is not good for the world. You know, if you're a young Japanese, oh my gosh, you should leave. Should leave now. But that doesn't mean that Japanese ETFs and stocks cannot go up for a while. And I hope they will. I think they will.
But, you know, for Japan, right, Japan has had like deflation for quite a while. And so, you know, why do you think that the Bank of Japan will now successfully push up the asset prices?
Well, they keep buying. That's their plan. They've done it well. Bonds have never been this expensive in Japan. Stocks are starting to go up. Stocks have been higher than they've been in 31, 32 years in Japan. So so far they've been successful at it. Will they continue to be? I don't know. They say they're going to continue to print money and buy liquid assets.
And so that's not so great for the young Japanese there.
Young Japanese should leave. If you're a young Japanese, you should leave, or you better learn self-defense. Because history is pretty clear that when you have big turmoil, big social problems and debt problems, it usually leads to social turmoil. So young Japanese better learn self-defense, because when they're adults, they're going to be problems.
Right, but a lot of people say that the Japanese debt problem isn't as bad because, you know, they own like 90% of their own debt. And so, I mean, is that a very important factor?
I mean, they don't have to pay it?
Well, they do.
Of course they do.
I think a lot of them is they're paying it to themselves. I guess they might just print their way out of it.
Well, that's their plan, to print their way out of it. But if you're suggesting to me that they don't have to pay the debt, you should alert all those people who own Japanese bonds, because they think they're going to get paid. If you say, oh, well, you're Japanese, so we don't have to pay you, I think you're going to have serious problems in Japan. You're going to bankrupt the insurance industry. You're going to bankrupt the banking industry. You're going to bankrupt the endowments. You're going to bankrupt a lot of people if you say to them, oh, by the way, you're Japanese, you're not going to get paid.
Yeah, it must be very hard to retire there.
If you tell people they're not going to get paid, you better learn self-defense too.
And, but you know, what do you think about America and America's debt problem? Do you think it's as bad as Japan, worse, or not as bad? What do you think about America?
Well, America is the largest debtor nation, absolute debtor nation in the history of the world, and it's getting worse all the time. Is it good? I mean, it's not a good time to be a young American. It's a good time to be an old American. We don't have to worry about paying it off. You know, my children, I have two teenage children, and the problems that they are inheriting are going to be a nightmare. 100 years ago, the UK was the richest, most powerful country in the world. There was no number two. And 50 years later, they were bankrupt. That's only 50 years later. They went from unrivaled number one to completely bankrupt. Now, it can happen. It has happened throughout history. So as I said, it's not a good time to be a young American. Not a good time to be a young Japanese either, back to what we were talking about before. But it has happened throughout history. It is happening again. And it's pretty clear how this will end for the Americans.
Well, I think I'm younger than your eldest daughter, but I think I'm a little bit older than your youngest daughter. And so where do you think, you know, someone who's young should go? Or maybe what country do you think has a better growth prospect?
Well, it really depends on you and what you're interested in. And in languages, of course, it's good to speak. You can learn a language, but if you already speak something or are fluent in something, that's a place to go. My view is that China is going to be the most important country in the 21st century. If the 19th century was the century of the UK, the 20th century was the century of the US. In my view, China will be the century of, it'll be the century of China. It's always changing. This is not, it's not the first time we've had this movie. It's happened always. And I don't see anybody else on the horizon. Korea will be great for 10 or 20 years when they open the 38th parallel, but Korea is not going to become the number one country of the 21st century. But there will be somebody that will be doing better. But as far as I can see, China is going to be the main country of the 21st century, whether we like it or not.
And, you know, so if China becomes like the main country, and you have a lot of people talking about this and the relations between China and the U.S. and, you know, both competing towards being or keep on being the you know, number one country. And so do you think this could cause some type of issues?
Well, it already is causing issues throughout history. When things go wrong in a country, the politicians blame the foreigners. It's easy to blame the foreigners. They have different language, different skin, different hair, different eyes, different food, different everything, different religions. So people always blame the foreigners, not just everywhere, throughout history. And that's what happened again recently. Mr. Trump started blaming foreigners. And the Democrats joined in to blame foreigners for the problems to win elections. But again, to repeat, this has always happened everywhere. And it's happened again. And unfortunately, it raises animosity. It stirs up emotions. Many people, for instance, have no clue about China. But if the government says they're bad, 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 everybody says, oh, they're bad. And so it doesn't build great relations for the future. Now, China and America for 30 or 35 years have made a lot of money together until recently. And so this is not good for the future. It has often led to animosity. It has often led to trade wars. Trade wars have never been good for anybody. Will not be good ever again either. But unfortunately, the main lesson of history is people do not learn the lessons of history. I can sit here and look at history and tell you this will end badly. People don't care. They don't know. And even if they do know history, like Mr. Trump, I don't know if he knew, but Mr. Trump said, I'm smarter than history. Don't worry about history. I'm smarter than him. Well, Mr. Trump may be, but I know history smarter than I am. And I know history shows this has always led to problems. And it sometimes leads to shooting wars as well. Not always, but sometimes.
And so, you know, right now you're currently invested in China also. And so, I mean, other than the whole, you know, the commodities, because I understand that. But do you think that China has any particular sectors that are a lot better than in the same sectors in other countries?
I bought Chinese travel companies recently. I own the airlines. You know, the Chinese for decades were not able to travel very much for many reasons, but now China's opened a lot and there are 1.4 billion Chinese and they all want to travel. They want to travel within their country and abroad. So I would suspect that Chinese tourism and travel is going to be one of the great growth industries of the next 20 or 30 years. There are a lot of them and they want to see the world and they've got the money and they can get permission now. They can get passports much easier. They can get money to travel much easier. So we'll see. Wine company, about Chinese wine companies, you know, people stopped going out. They didn't go to the bars or restaurants. Most Chinese don't even know about wine, but I've seen as many countries have developed throughout history, people learn about wine and they drink grape wine. And that I hope will be happening again.
Well, you know, I'm Chinese and whenever my dad drinks wine, he doesn't like the taste. And I don't know, he might be an exception, but he likes the Chinese liquor.
Yeah, Mao Tai is, rice wine is extremely popular in China, gigantically popular. That's what they grew up with, and that's what they drink. I know that. But when Americans first drank wine, you must know about the great, huge California wine industry. That industry didn't exist 80 years ago. There were very, very few Chinese wine, I mean, American wines 50 years ago. Now the California wine industry, the American wine industry is a big, big business. That has happened in Australia, same thing. There was no Australian wine industry 80 years ago. Now it's huge. Historically, people have learned about wine and have liked wine. I know the Chinese love rice wine now, Mao Tai. I don't particularly, I mean, I like good Mao Tai. And everything you just said is correct. But if we were sitting here in America 80 years ago, people would have said, wine? What are you talking about? Drink beer, drink whiskey, don't drink wine.
And so are you investing in the Chinese stock market, or is it like a private equity investment for the
No,
wine?
I mainly invest in listed things.
Right.
I basically never invest in unlisted entities, whatever they are. I don't have a farm, for instance. I prefer to buy the Rogers Agricultural Index.
So then how do you do well in the Chinese stock market? Because it's a very different market than the American or the Canadian market. And I feel like there's a lot of manipulation in the Chinese stock market. And so maybe you could talk a little bit about how you invest in the Chinese stock market.
It's always manipulation everywhere, including in America. Yes, it's against the law. And yes, we have the SEC. And yes, it's hard. But it happens everywhere. If you're going to be successful, you have to understand humans, people, human nature is part of the process. I hope that I can do enough homework and research with my Chinese investments that I'll get it right. But there certainly has been and will be fraud in China. There has been and will be fraud in the United States. There has been and will be fraud everywhere in the world.
But for the market manipulation, I think it's done a lot by the government, which I mean I guess you could say that they do it here,
There
but
was a prince, trillions, that's with a T. Trillions of dollars. They buy trillions of bonds. No central bank in the history of the world has ever manipulated as much as the American Central Bank is right now. Certainly not the Chinese. The Chinese have printed some money, but nothing like in America. The Chinese government has spent some money, but nothing like what Washington is doing. Britain, Japan, I mean, I'm not saying the Japanese don't, I mean, the Chinese don't do it because they certainly have. Whew, but nothing like what America or Tokyo or Britain. Yeah, I mean, that's part of the way the world is. Human beings think they have to save each other. And when they can, they look for an easy way to save each other. And other human beings think, I want to get rich fast. And this is the way I can get rich fast. But you have to understand. Human beings, or please, you should not be invest. You should not be doing many things, but you should certainly not be investing.
And so, because you were talking about the Fed printing all this money and China taking over the US as the number one economy. So from this, do you think that the US dollar could lose its reserve currency status or something like this?
Well, if I've said before, I own a lot of US dollars, but history is very clear that no currency has been the world's number one currency for more than 100, 150 years at a time. The US has been the number on top for a long time now. I said it's already the largest debtor nation in the history of the world. So there are fundamental reasons that that's changing. always many countries looking for a competitor for the U.S. The way the world is right now, if the U.S. gets angry at you, they impose sanctions and they cut you off from the U.S. dollar. Well, many people are starting to say, well, that's not the way it's supposed to work. An international currency is supposed to be neutral. You can use it for anything. So now they're, for political reasons, people are looking for a competitor for the U.S. dollar. So I don't like saying it. I'm an American too, but, you know, I can see down the road there are reasons that America, like every other international currency, will lose its status, and the process is starting now.
And so do you think there could be like a replacement currency, or do you think it's just kind of going to spread out and every country is going to just use its own or kind of exchange with other countries' currencies?
Well, there always has been a replacement eventually. As I said before, we've had many international currencies throughout history. None has lasted more than 150 years. British pound, Spanish peseta, French franc, Dutch guilder. I mean, this is not the first time that the world has had a major international currency. And all of them have lost their status eventually, mainly because they get too overextended or too much in debt. And the world moves on to something else. They look for something sounder. That seems to be what's happening now. But I want to repeat, that's the way the world has always worked. Whether we like it or not, you can say, no, we're America. It cannot happen. Well, maybe, but it always has happened. And it seems to be happening again.
And so do you think that there are any like good replacements and possible replacements for...
Well, I have ideas. I don't have to, it doesn't matter. I don't have to do anything yet. I'm waiting for the U.S. dollar to get overpriced. It could turn into a bubble, depending on how bad things get. People might try gold again. People have tried gold often in history. People might try the Chinese currency, but that's absurd right now because the Chinese currency is not even freely tradable. It's a blocked currency. The world will find something. It doesn't wake up one day and say, okay, this is Monday morning. We're going to no longer use the U.S. dollar. We're not going to use this. Usually a gradual and ongoing process. And the people are, as I said, the world is now looking for something to compete with the dollar. And the world has always found something, and the world will find something again.
And so, you were talking about the Chinese yuan. And China's history with inflation has been kind of, scary for, I guess, people who were living there 20 years ago. And, do you think China could get some type of inflation in the mid or high 20s again anytime soon?
Well, every country's had periods of serious inflation. The United States, I lived through the 70s when American inflation was pretty much out of control. You can read back to there's a great song once by the Everly Kingston Trio about the greenback dollar. That was a song of when the greenback dollar was totally collapsed. There was such serious inflation in the U.S. So it's happened more than once in the U.S. It's happened more than once everywhere, including China. And will it happen again? Yeah, of course it will. People are still the same all over the world. I would suspect it's more likely to happen in the U.S. before it happens in China next time, because we are the ones that are printing the most money in the world right now. We and the Japanese and the English. To repeat, the Chinese have been much more restrained about printing money and going into debt this time so far. It doesn't mean they won't change, but so far I'm more worried about other countries with inflation. But again, if and when we do have serious inflation, everybody has it. You can't sit there and say, oh, I'm country S. America, China, Japan, Europe, they all have inflation, but we don't. That's not the way the world works, because everybody buys whatever the price of wheat is, it's the same all over the world. Whatever the price of copper is, it's the same all over the world.
Yeah, that's right. And so, I mean, if you're going back to the 1970s, do you think that inflation in the future would look something like the 1970s, where you get this stagflation, or do you think it would just be out of control inflation?
Well, it is usually meant you start off with stagflation, and we have indications of that now in the U.S. And then politicians and central banks try to save the situation, and they make it worse. That's what happened in the 70s. Finally, the president of the U.S. actually said to the central bank, you've got to stop this. Do anything that's necessary to stop it. And he did. He was a smart guy. There haven't been many smart central bankers in world history. He happened to be one of them, and he stopped it one more. And he stopped it. It can happen. We do occasionally have a smart central banker. The Indians had one a few years ago. It happens, but most central bankers are bureaucrats and academics, and they don't know what they're doing.
And so you just mentioned India, and I read somewhere that you're kind of skeptical about the Indian economy. And so, why is that?
Well, no, if you can, I have invested in India at times, and if things are right, I'll invest in India again. But India has right now has built up a lot of debt. They don't talk about it a lot. You know, the currency is under pressure because they printed a lot of money. There's a gigantic bureaucracy in India. But if you can find the right Indians and the right companies, you'll make, I mean, a lot of very, very smart Indians, a billion people there ought to be. So there's some great success stories. And if you find them, I encourage you to invest. And I have no Indian investments at the moment, but who knows?
And because, right now the United States and China, was going through all this trade war. And so I think that the U.S. might try to shift away from importing from China. And so do you think that, a country maybe like Vietnam or something could become America's major importing country or export?
There is, we discussed before, how Mr. Trump aroused animosity and used trade as a main instrument. And yes, those feelings still, emotions still exist. And so more and more people think that they do need to find an alternative to China. Vietnam is benefiting at the moment. I mean, Vietnam only has not 90 million people, so I don't think it can become the main supplier of the U.S. They can become a major supplier, just as Japan did, Germany did, other countries have. Everybody's looking for alternatives always, but that's whether you like China or hate China. What people look for is you look for the best source and the cheapest source. Everybody wants to buy cheap, good, high quality goods, wherever they're from. And people are always looking for that. And Vietnam, at the moment anyway, is in the process of beginning to produce some of those goods.
And when you're looking for countries with a lot of opportunities, how do you distinct the countries that are cheap and don't deserve to be cheap, opposed to the ones that are cheap and do deserve to be cheap?
Well, when I anyway look for things that are cheap, but you have to find a reason that it's going to change. Something can stay cheap forever. You could have bought Cuba 70 years ago. It was very, very cheap. It's still cheap and going to stay cheap for a while until something changes. North Korea, very cheap. But until something changes, it's going to stay cheap. So you have to find something that is changing. At least for me, when I find something changing, positive, I try to invest, and sometimes I get it right.
And so do you think we're going into a period where a lot of change might be taking place? Because right now, I think we're in a pretty confusing time. And so do you think that we're moving into a time period where there's going to be a lot of crises and a lot of opportunities?
Well, in 2008, we had a big problem in the world because of too much debt. The debt was very, very high and everybody suffered. Well, since 2018, the debt has skyrocketed everywhere. Even China now has a lot of debt. China had very little debt 20 years ago, 25 years, 15 years ago. But even China has a lot of debt now. So the next time we have an economic problem, it's going to be the worst in my lifetime because debt is so high. We always have economic problems periodically. Maybe we never will have an economic problem again. But in my view, if and when we do, it's going to be horrible because there's so much debt now. Well, it's never seen debt like what we have now. So it's going to be horrible. And usually when you have gigantic crises, lots of change takes place. And to survive, we have to figure out what the change will be and who will benefit and who will suffer.
And so, you know, right now you're in Singapore. So how do you think, you know, countries like Singapore will, how do you think countries like Singapore will perform in these types of situations?
Well, so far in the past 50 or 55 or so years, Singapore has done extremely well at adapting. You know, 50 years ago, Singapore was a swamp with 500,000 people. Now it's one of the most successful countries in the world. It's got over 5 million people. And that's all happened in the last 50 or 60 years. So far, Singapore has done a very good job. Will it in the next 50 or 60 years? That's the question. So far, so good. But you can ask me in 30 years, ask me in 40 years.
Well, you know, if you look back, you know, everything seems so simple, but when you look forward, just everything is super blurry and you can't tell what is going to happen.
Well, and I wish it were easy. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could all sit here and say, this is what's going to be happening in 10 years. Oh my goodness, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I want to kind of wrap up this interview by asking you a little bit about your motorcycle adventures and what you were able to see in the countries that became successful that you didn't see in the countries that did not become successful.
Well, normally looking back at history or whatever, the government, there was a guy named Thomas Jefferson who was president of the United States once, and he basically said that government which governs least governs best. But there have been Chinese philosophers who basically, there was one, what was the great, I forget his name. He said, nobody even knows who a great leader is, the best leaders. And then in a few years, the people think, well, we did all this ourselves. But it was a great leader who left them alone. So Chinese philosophers, American statesmen, many people have realized that if you leave people alone, Britain in the 19th century, the British basically said, have at it, go to it. And Britain became extremely successful. So usually when you leave people alone to let them make their own way and fulfill their ambitions, the country as a whole succeeds. Adam Smith was a famous philosopher from the 18th century, he essentially said the same thing. He called it the invisible hand, that the invisible, if you let people do what they want, you will probably lead to prosperity. The communists said, no. Karl Marx said, no, that's not the way to do it. The way to do it is, everybody knows you have to build capital to build an economy and to build society. Karl Marx's book was called Das Kapital. everybody knows the importance of capital. Marx had it wrong. At least we, so far it's been proved he had it wrong about how to do that. He said, no, no, you let the state and the government control everybody and control the economy. And that's how you build a country and a society. Well, so far, the people who've said he who governs least governs best have been correct. And the ones who said, no, 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 more control. And the Chinese philosopher said the same thing. If you read what he said, the best government is when the people don't even know who the government is. The worst government is when everybody is afraid of and knows the government. So as I said, it's not just American statesmen. Many people have figured this out over the years. So that's the best way. At least that's what history indicates. So I look for a country with a lot of assets where something is changing, and then I try to get involved.
Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of countries now are moving away from that direction into the way of a lot of trouble, I think.
You see the same thing I see. I mean, go on the internet, read the newspapers, turn on the TV. People are looking for easy answers, and they want somebody to save them, and they think the government can save them. If somebody comes riding up on a white horse and says, I have the answer, everybody says, wow, who is she? Let's let her do it. Unfortunately, usually she has an easy answer that doesn't work.
Yeah, and so that's why we're seeing all the debts skyrocket and, you know, all of this monetary policy that just, you know, it's like kicking the can down the road. And so, well, we're kind of low on time now, but I mean, I would love to, you know, interview you again sometime in the future. And so for everybody watching, you know, you should go read some of Jim Rogers' books to become more educated, and make sure to go on his website, jimrogers.com, as well. And so, you know, Jim, I really want to thank you a lot today for coming on.
Well, it's been fun, Chan. I hope everybody does their homework and learns what's happening in the world, whether watching your show or whatever source, because we must get knowledgeable, because there are serious problems developing in the world. And if you understand what's happening, you will survive and you might even thrive. If you don't understand, you will probably suffer.